This time it's for the money.
It's time for the money.
Hello and welcome to the Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is the podcast where you receive stories, tips, and strategies from entrepreneurs who've done it to grow your business and take yourself to the next level as a person. Yo, today on the podcast, we have a treat for you. Ayo, oh, I said his name wrong. Oh, Ayo, forgive me.
Ayo Dele.
Ayo is a program manager for Azure Compute at Microsoft. Ayo studied computer science at Temple University. And man, he's done a lot of computer tech work. He's had software engineering and product positions at notable companies such as Facebook, Lockheed Martin, and more. You have him on the podcast today to talk about being Black in tech. As you know, minority groups face barriers when entering the Black technology space. So we want to dive deep into one, maneuvering through that space, and two, getting into that space. So I'm really excited for that podcast. Owen, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Alex. Having a great day, getting ready to go to the cottage tomorrow for the weekend. So it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. Just getting ready. You know when you have that excitement of going on vacation? I haven't had a vacation in a long time, you know? Mm-hmm. All I know is the grind, bro. 24/7 hustler. And here I am going away. This first of many, right? I'll tell you this. First cottage experience ever. I've never done cottaging before. So I'm looking to get my cottage virginity taken. And throughout university.
Your cottage virginity taken.
Right? And then through uni, all summers, bro, I've always been in Toronto. Never came home. This is the summer I came home. Spent summer. Felt like first year. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going cottaging, kind of like do a vacation. It's a really nice place, going with my high school buddies.
Okay.
So gonna get a good round of golfing on a Saturday morning. A really
at the
nice
cottage?
There's yeah,
a cottage.
Yeah, in Huntsville.
What kind of luxury cottage is that? To bro. Be able to go golfing? Yo, bro, the wealth.
You think I'm supposed to be like in the woods, bro. Bro, see, this is the life. Man, but if you see this thing, it's so luxurious, bro. I'm so shocked at the price we got it for. So I think I paid like at least $167 for both nights. So I think
that's only two nights you're staying there.
Yeah, it's only two nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
So two nights in a day.
Exactly.
Got you.
So we had to book that, bro. We had to get it. I think because of COVID, no one was really trying to make any movements later on in the summer. So we got it at the perfect time, bro. But
Airbnb?
It's like an Airbnb competitor.
All right. No free promo.
No free promo, bro.
No free promo.
Exactly.
We make our own Rockefeller.
Exactly, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
I've been diving, man.
Oh, for sure. I've been diving into Jay-Z shit. I should have gotten title from Jumpman. You know, I've been diving into a lot of his shit on Spotify. So I've been like having mad Jay-Z quotes and all that floating around. Bro.
You know me, man. Like every bar I sing is a Jay-Z bar. Even like right now, before you logged on, I was listening to Heaven, and this is one killer bar. He goes like, "It's like in the ghost, can you see me? Can you see me?" So meaning like,
I get it.
No, being ghost in the ghost, right? It's like I'm being ghost. Like you can't see through the tinted windows.
I got it.
But you're Rod. This is for the audience. They don't know
okay,
you.
Okay,
right?
Okay,
so
okay.
Being
okay,
ghost in the ghost, can you see me? That's luxury right there, bro. You talking about luxury? That's luxury.
I feel you.
You know?
I feel you. Yeah. That's a fact. But yeah. On my end, thank you for asking how I'm doing.
Fam, yo, you can't even do that because I was just about to ask you. You know when someone asks, like when someone does something, it's like, oh yeah, thanks for, like you're walking towards it. It's like, oh, you didn't ask for me. I was like, bro, I was going to go get you your food, your drink, et cetera. I'm like, well, your mom asked you to clean something and you're already working towards cleaning it. You just feel so like, I was gonna do it, like, you know, just let me do it, give me two more minutes and I was gonna do it.
But yeah, I was gonna ask those stuff.
Yeah, Alex Whitfield, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm feeling great, bro. I don't know if y'all can tell, I'm energetic today, you know. I just went for a walk. I had a good day overall. I'm excited to have some more people coming on the podcast next week, so I'm excited to get that right, you know. Vivian K, actually I shouldn't say it. But
it gets people anticipating for Vivian K because she's like a powerhouse.
Yeah, shout out to Vivian. We have a lot more people coming on the pod as well, so I'm excited for that. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited for the shit we have coming up, you know? And this one took time before to just go for a walk and clear my head out, you know? And really just, like, think to myself, take some time for myself. Yesterday, I had a horrible day, you know? It was just super busy. Everything wasn't going right, you know? So I took some time. I went and got a pack of Skittles.
you went to the convenience store and bought some Skittles. Bought
Skittles. I've never done that since I was probably like 12.
Oh, you know
what I'm saying? Like, who you know, Skittles must be struggling. Actually, who knows?
You know, maybe because the customer base is a little bit younger.
Exactly. Who buys Skittles as adults?
Yeah.
You know, maybe. Well, I don't know, but yeah, I don't ever buy Skittles, so. Yeah, when I was like, you know what? I'm gonna have some Skittles today.
Mm-hmm. Treat yourself, man.
Exactly. You know, chopped it up, watched the Master P doc. Mm-hmm. You know, have you seen that shit, by the way?
No, I've been watching something else. But is this something I should check out?
Yo, it's really good. Yo, there's a story they tell on the show about how he wanted to get in the magazine, so he called the magazine up and was firing gunshots in the background to threaten them to say he better be on the magazine cover or else.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. And he got on. You know, and I was like, damn, that's fire. You know what I'm saying? That's why we should start cold calling people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The trigger in the background.
And we got to create some, like, some commotion in some space to get people to notice us.
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt. You know? Yeah, man. But, yeah, that was dope. So I'm just happy to bring y'all some value, happy to get back to it, you know? So, yeah, it's just been my vibe. So even with business, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, like, I think, you know, I know your schedule. I know, like, what you do, but to do what you're doing and to always, to have, like, a bad day here and there is normal, but you sustain this every single day. I think you should just share briefly how your day-to-day is, like, what you do from, like, what time you wake up, your activities throughout the day, and then after work, hustle over everything that happens, then when you go to sleep, it's like, I feel like you have some time to relax, but just like share that with people so they understand like your schedule and how packed it is.
Okay. I wake up at about 7, get up, go for a jog, come home, the jump rope and weights. Then I'll try to make some breakfast, take a shower, and I probably have like coffee going or tea going as I'm in the shower. Come out, try to eat breakfast quick, hop on the laptop around like 8:15-ish, and start getting to work for like 8:30-ish, and start like send out emails for hustle and for work. Just try to like see what my day is looking like. Work from 9 to 6. And then I might take like a half an hour break. Then usually we'll have a pod or like something to do with a discovery call around that time. So I'll hop on a discovery call. After the discovery call, I'll try and get something to eat real quick. Most likely something quick, maybe like a sandwich or something. Then, it's back to work, editing the pod, editing YouTube, editing graphics for Instagram and wherever, Instagram stories. And we got to talk about that, by the way. And yeah, this working on hustle. Then after, it's girl time. So I spend some time to actually, like, you know, see how my girl's doing, check in, you know, make sure she's good. Then more hustle to the...
Bless you.
Pardon me. Then until about 12 o'clock, I'll usually finish up 12, maybe. No, that's a lie. I'll probably get my post out around like 11. And start working on more stuff till about like 12:45, 1 usually. So like probably like that's my full day till from like 7 a.m. to about 1 usually.
So, yeah. Alex, do you feel like you're a 24/7 hustler?
Yeah, man. I feel like I'm hustling my ass off, bro. You know, now it's to like optimize that and really just dive deep into exactly what makes the most revenue for the company. And yeah, really just thinking smart. And that's like on one day too. So I have other days where I'm working on WIT Media and, you know, servicing clients, hopping on client calls, and balancing that as well. So like that's like a Monday will be that for the pod. Then I'm balancing my stuff with clients, ads, making sure the ads are running correctly. So yeah, man, hustling for sure.
Yeah, man, I got to give it to you, bro. Like that is, that's a lot, but you managed to do it well. And I feel like your habits have kind of been programmed. Like now your body's so attuned to it that it doesn't feel like stress. It just feels like second nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It's really just prioritizing is what I find. Trying to be accountable and trying to find balance, mm-hmm. you know? So on Saturdays after 3, you know, we talked about this.
You're on lockdown, man.
Yeah, I'm on lockdown. I've locked off everything. Unless like it's a fire, then like, okay, it's a fire. We're going to deal with it. But like no interviews, no calls, no, nothing like that. It's just strictly like time for me and my girl, really, you know? So mm-hmm. trying to find that type of time, you know? So mm-hmm. that's yeah, where man. I'm at with it.
You got to have a healthy balance to stay sane and to also get some new ideas to stay creative.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of how I've been balancing my days currently, you know.
I hear you.
Let's get into the business tip of the week. So one thing we have IO speaking about is getting hired. And we didn't really cover exactly how to get hired in Canada specifically. He gave really good details to get hired in general and the strategies to get into a specific company. And I just want to add on top of it. I don't want to jack his points. And make sure you pay attention to that in the podcast, by the way, because he really like hit it out of the park on that specific topic. So there's a specific strategy that I've found is super successful when it comes to pitching companies for speaking to the HR person, getting in the right door. One is on LinkedIn. First, you can pay to have your profile amplified, which it's a recession right now, so it might not be an affordable option. The second option that you can do is one, look at the application. When you go to apply for a job on LinkedIn, it'll have specific features available. One is Easy Apply. Easy Apply has been a killer. I make sure my resume is up to par. If your resume is not good, place you can go is to Brand Resumes. Shout out to Brand Resumes on YouTube. Killer stuff on YouTube. Google University. And make sure your resume is solid. Once you have that and you're ready to go, Easy Apply on LinkedIn is one of the best ways to have your resume shout out to a lot of people in a quick manner. I've done this and got hired so quickly. I couldn't even tell you. I'm trying to think the last time I needed it. It was a while ago, but it worked like a charm. I suggested to my friends, and they got hired this way. My cousin, shout out to my cousin Kadeem. I told him that method, and he got hired within a month. So that method is a big gem. Now, to get even further down, once you see a specific profile that you like or a specific company you want to get in touch with, one major key is to see if the profile has the HR person attached to it. This is a big gem because if you can get in touch with them, they're the key in. So that's one thing. And then Io's point that he makes in the pod is like the perfect thing on top of it to layer it in. I want to feel like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, bro. Like the HR is the gatekeeper to all jobs. I know when I was applying for jobs early this year, before being let go, there's one company who I was so qualified for the job, but we had such a rough conversation for the first like call. It's like a little, like, you know, before you go to the interview, you have to like talk to the HR person. Mm-hmm. And it was such a rough call, but then she ended up still passing me on, even though like we had a rough call. So I don't know what happened, but I always find like you have to befriend those HR people when they call you. You have to get them, don't even tell them anything about your qualifications. You have to make sure that they like you more than anything, right?
Agree.
Because they know that you already qualify for the job. You just have to make them like you, show them your personality, make them understand your background. And once they get a good feeling of you, once you make them feel like, hey, you're important as well as a HR person calling me, they're easily going to take you to the second round. So I found that I think I just got lucky with that one, but make sure you have a solid call with the first interview when they call you for about 10 minutes just to feel you out before bringing you back for the first official round of the interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Also, a few things you can search on LinkedIn when you're looking for people is search the term "I'm hiring" in the search bar, because a lot of people will put that in their name to attract talent. Mm-hmm. Commenting and actually engaging. Like, I know it sounds like easy, like common knowledge, but you'd be surprised when people don't do that. Comment, post, and write about the topics you're interested in. And do that at scale while you're looking to drive traffic to your page to hire or to get hired, you know? So
I think bro.
Those are a major key, because LinkedIn's algorithm right now is super open. Mm-hmm. So engaging.
I was even telling my cousin that. I was like, bro, you need to start posting content on LinkedIn. And even if you don't have any of your original thoughts, if you see someone share an article, add your 2 cents to it, because if someone likes it, people comment it, it shows up on their feed, then they check out your profile, and it just goes down through this rabbit hole where people are going to look at your profile. So adding your 2 cents into everything, it's kind of like the retweeting of LinkedIn, right? And then just sharing your thoughts, you can actually be a thought leader without actually creating your own original content.
100% agree. So those are some tips you can take if you're looking for a job currently. I know the market's not doing so well. The economy's not doing so well. So use those if you're looking for a job currently. Usually we don't cover people looking for jobs or project managers, but we think with their current economy, it's important to not be ignorant there and give you some value, you know? So this is one of the reasons why we're having Ayo on the podcast. So with that being said, that wraps up the business tip of the week. Owen, it's on you, bro.
And like Al, bro, you already know what time it is. It's the Hustle Nation time. All right, guys. Mr. Hustle Muscle here, Owen Osinde. My Hustle Nation tip of the week is time management. There's so much energy that you have throughout the day to really dedicate it towards the task that you want to do. And sometimes you confuse busy work with productivity. And I've been a victim of this. Is I get a task for example, we are building our new product, Hustler's Card, and we are trying to get in touch with different businesses, hotels, travel companies, lifestyle brands, SaaS companies, and it's a sales process. And sometimes you're sending out, you know, a lot of emails, you're following up, but managing that activity, seeing how much time you're spending on that activity, tracking how successful you are at that activity, can give you a clear picture into how you're actually doing on that activity. I've always been someone who just focuses in and just does the work, but sometimes I like not being in sales anymore. I have to create our own sales process using the tools that we have, and also keeping the cost down low, because, you know, we're still growing our company. We don't want to use all these different apps that collect a lot of money. So one thing that I'm going to be working on is creating a Excel sheet, which tracks productivity. So all the emails sent, which ones are opened, which ones got responses, how many emails that I sent today, what activity did I do at this hour and that hour. That way it keeps me accountable to what I'm going to do. And that's what I want to share with you guys, is keep yourself accountable to all the activities that you do every single day, because whatever doesn't get measured gets, you know, it disappears and you don't know how you did at that task. So you got to see if that particular activity is producing any results that are going to be revenue generating for your company, or are they not? And this way, it's going to allow you to see which areas of focus you should really be tailoring your schedule towards. So managing your time is extremely important. As an entrepreneur, you got to know where your time is going, and you got to you can't confuse busy work with productivity. It's easy to feel like you're getting things done, but if you're not doing the right things, your time is getting wasted and nothing is really moving. It's more you're moving laterally instead of moving vertically. So that is the Hustle Nation tip of the week, guys, is manage your time efficiently, find the different tools, the different products, or you can create your own products. Like what we're going to be doing is managing our activities and seeing how we're tracking those week by week and seeing the type of results that we yield from the activity. And that way you can actually analyze and you can assess your productivity and see how good you are or how, or what you need to improve to get yourself to the next level. So that is the Hustle Nation tip of the week.
Boom. And now let's hop into our housekeeping announcements and hop straight into the pod. Peace.
Peace out.
Hey guys, before we hop into the podcast, we have a few housekeeping announcements. For free to support the podcast, if you're on Apple, make sure you rate and write a review about our podcast. This makes a huge difference. On Instagram, make sure to take a screenshot and tag us in Instagram stories. It makes a huge difference. It helps us share the podcast out and expand the community. On Twitter, we're at 24/7 Hustlers. And on Facebook, we're Hustle Over Everything. Guys, we were busting our ass, especially Owen, working on their weekly newsletter. It's called the 24/7 Hustle. It covers news in business, music, and culture, all through the lens of entrepreneurship. And for our paid options, guys, we have some great merch on the store. Check it out at hustleovereverything.co. And lastly, our Proud to Pay program is linked in the description down below. Now let's hop into the show. Aya, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Most definitely. So, listeners, one thing we want to start incorporating, I was a little bit different, is incorporating a cheers to the pod. You know, so for the first time, you're going to be a part of the first cheers on the podcast, man. So, I like to make this cheers out to anybody that has an investment. Oh, and raise your glass.
There we go. Raise it, bro. I'm raising it.
You know, all right. So, anybody who's got an investment, anybody who seeked an investment and got it, you know, so Squire, the crew, Blavity, to black businesses, yes, getting investment and growing the business. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to that.
Cheers. So, listeners, you know, a little background with Ayo. You know, we met 2 years ago at Afrotech in San Francisco. At that time, yeah. And, you know, we were just, of course, everyone's traveling. You know, people are coming from Afrotech because it's a bunch of black people just in San Fran. And coming back, you know, I think I saw you at the Stripe event, Ayo, with your boys and everything.
Yeah.
And then we didn't really connect. But then on our flight back, I think you guys were going back to Philly. We stopped at Charlotte, North Carolina at the airport. And then we were all waiting for our flights. And then that's how we connected and we all exchanged info. And we've been staying in touch since 2018, I believe, at that 2018. And yeah, and look at us now, we're here connected, chatting and
that's the power of Afrotech right there, man. It's like you get to meet a lot of like-minded individuals, not even because y'all know y'all in Toronto too, man, so it's like not even in just the States, it's like all across, you know, the world, North America, but you got people coming all from all over the world, man, to be there and connect with a lot of hustlers. So, you know, I had to get on the podcast, man.
Absolutely, man. And you never know where these contacts go. You know, I think when you go to events like these, you expect them to be transactional immediately. Yeah. But just like keeping in touch and nurturing those relationships, you never know what comes out of it, like what we're doing right now.
For sure, man.
Yeah.
Most definitely, man. So what's been keeping you busy over the last few years, man? What's been on your radar?
Man, since then, man, you know, I ended up, so at that time, we were flying back to Philly, but we all lived in New York. So it was just a cheaper flight, you know, back then. So we just flew to Philly and then ended up coming back to New York. But I eventually ended up getting a role with Facebook. So pretty much after Afrotech, and Afrotech is kind of one of the things that springboarded me to get those networks into Facebook. So I'm moving out to Facebook, which I'm moving out to the Bay, which I'm currently at now. Started working in VR and virtual reality. So if you guys have ever heard of Oculus, the headset, what kind of immerses you and makes you feel like you're in a whole different world. I've been doing that. And I recently just transitioned into Microsoft, now working as a PM, and I'm going to be going to Atlanta in a couple months, man. But ultimately, you know, I've been working on a lot of side hustles, man. So it was perfect for this, man, in terms of startup that I have going on to kind of use bridging the gap between co-working and technology as well as local spaces, along with just outreach for the youth as well. It's kind of taking the knowledge that I've gained from technology and paid to the next generation as well.
Yeah. That's a big game, man. So basically, you said you made the connect at Afrotech.
Yeah.
And that was what springboarded into Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. So I made a connect, and it was because it was, and like you were saying, it wasn't just transaction. It was like, let's just keep in touch. So it wasn't like it was just like, okay, you're right in the pipeline. It was just like we were just conversing, and she's like, oh, this might be a good role for you, because I know you, because I had a little bit of background in VR, and she's like, yeah, this, we're really trying to push VR, and we don't have any people of diversity in VR, so that was kind of like my segue to get into it. So me and the young lady, we're still tight to this day, and even when I left, she was like, we still text all the time and stuff like that as well too, man. So it was great.
That's amazing, yeah, man.
That's yeah. Big ups to you, bro.
Yeah, man, and, trying.
Yeah, and that's one of the conversations we really want to talk to you about today. About being Black and, you know, getting into tech, right? That's the conversation we want to have with you. And you have a big role. Yeah. So just to like start things off, I mean, what got you into tech? What made you decide to enter this field into tech?
Yeah, man. I always like, now I'm kind of sharing my story a little bit more, man. But when I was growing up, like a lot of people, I just wanted to hoop. So high school, I wanted to play basketball. That was like my only thing. And my mom, I'm Nigerian, so my mom was kind of like the, we need to get this boy some discipline.
She's a militant.
Yeah. It's like, yo, can't just be all sports and, you know, that's it. Because my grades was always good, but it was just to play sports. Like, if you don't have a certain, you know, GPA, you can't play sports, you know. So it was just for that. And then one summer when I got into high school, my mom was like, you know, you're going to spend your summer days working at your uncle's IT maintenance shop. So I was 14 at this time, so that was kind of like my introduction to it. I hated it at first. I was like, man, I used to take the train all across. If you guys are familiar with the DMV, I'm from DMV, so taking the metro from one side of the train to the opposite side, I had never done long commutes like that every day of my life. So I was just like, oh, this is a lot. And it was just like, oh man, why am I doing this? But around that time, the iPhone came out and everything too, the first iPhone. And so I was like, okay, this is something that, you know, when I go to college, I already knew what I was going to major just because I had that exposure. It wasn't because it was like I fell in love with it per se, but it was just like I was kind of pushed into it and I had gotten comfortable, and then eventually I kind of came around to it, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's how it all starts, right? It's like some things that you don't really see the value of it. And, you know, you have people who actually know, they actually have like a broader view of things and actually push you towards those things. Like I saw the same thing. Parents were like very... You know, we immigrated from Kenya, and my dad is like highly educated. He's like, your school, shared the same hoop dreams as you.
want to
make it into the league, but you know, stop growing at like 5'11". So I'm like, you know what, this, you gotta move, you gotta look into other career paths. So starting from then on, I mean, you transition into high school, you finish up high school. Like, what goes on next into, you know, deciding what you want to major in and deciding what you want to do from there and you know, starting your career essentially.
Yeah. And I don't think many people know this about me, but actually when I actually started, I was initially doing computer engineering, which is different from computer science, which I ended up, you know, finishing out in, but I was doing computer engineering and I was heavily focused on like the mechanical engineering and stuff like that, because I initially knew, I was like, okay, engineering, I had the background in, you know, IT from my uncle's experience. So I was like, all right, just a streamline. And I just wasn't really feeling the mechanical side of it, more of like the hardware side of it. And that kind of helped me know, okay, you really want to be a software guy. You know, looking back, that's what I can reflect on. Back then, I was just like, yeah, I need to, trying to figure this out. Like, where am I trying to find my avenues at? I was always good at math, always good at crunching numbers. The hardware portions of it wasn't really my thing, and still to this day is not really my thing, even though I have a VR background. So eventually ended up segueing into computer science and you know, it wasn't like I just breezed through school or anything like that, you know, but eventually, you know, you just learn and you're learning with other people as well too. In computer science, it's like your whole, your classmates are all turning to your friends, different races, different, you know, people of socioeconomic statuses, like y'all all in together to pass, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, yo, we got this test coming up. All right, we all got to huddle up. Let's get this shit done, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, we kind of all bonded. So as we kept progressing through the curriculum, we knew we had to, okay, we got to study for this, that, and third. So that's eventually how I made it through. If it wasn't for, I guess, that circle that I had, I definitely wouldn't have made it through, man.
Yeah, man. I feel like those, like, computer science guys always stick together, you know. It's like, it's a tight community because, like, those are the people you rely on to, you know, get you ahead and move you on. So, you know, focusing on that, what was your first job in your tech career?
First job, I guess we're not going to count technically the, you know, the high school. We'll call it an internship. First job, I had an internship with TD Bank. I know TD Bank is big in Canada, actually.
Massive.
So I had a internship with TD Bank. I was doing data analytics on their credit cards, and they wanted to be able to break the numbers down and like figure out who was using their. Because TD Bank isn't as big in the state. So they were trying to figure out, like, how can we get the trends up? Like, what are the trends? What people are using this card in the states right now? So just breaking down different analytics on the demographics of the customers and where they're from and, you know how much they're spending, so on and so forth. It got really granular. And at that point, I'm like, why y'all care so much about this stuff? Now, you know, me being in the professional world is like, okay, now I see why. Because, you know, data really is how you target to your audience, especially for tech and any big tech company, you have to have the data. So that was my first role. If we want to go from an internship standpoint, but if we want to go full time, I started with Lockheed Martin, which is an aerospace and defense company, but I was doing systems test automation. So a lot of automated tests for our website that we were trying to build for the Air Force and just kind of all the things that a pilot could do for their maintenance website. I was automating that. So it's like, okay, how do I, you know, think about it from a pilot perspective? So it was pretty cool from that standpoint. It was just a lot of security that went into it. I was like, this definitely isn't where I want to stay for too long.
For sure. Man. Yeah. I mean, talking about you entering in the space, you know, what's interesting is like, you know, being in Black Attack, it's like very, like, you can see it's a very white dominated space. Yeah. So entering your career, like, what are some of the, because what we want to learn today is, you know, people want to enter technology, like the Black community is not really widely represented in the space.
Not at all.
You're someone who's really ventured in there. You've got great positions at two great companies like, you know, Facebook and Microsoft. What were some of like the things that you noticed early on in your career that really were major hurdles for you to really overcome those, and how did you overcome those barriers to really make a career for yourself?
I mean, so let's start it back to where I'm from, right? So I'm from DMV area, specifically like PG County. I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard of it, but it's a very Black county outside of DC, like right outside of DC. So I grew up around predominantly a lot of Latinx and Black people when I from high school, and then I went to Temple University, which is PWI, which is predominantly a white institution. However, there was a large demographic of Black people there. So I had my crowd pretty much up from 1 to 22, 23 when I graduated school. I had my, you know, people that look like me. So when you go into a space, a tech space, and you see, you don't, you know, people that don't look like you, it kind of, it's definitely one, it's isolating. It feels like, man, there's not many of us. Two, but when you do find that person, it's like you kind of, you know, the kind of latch onto each other. Somebody I'm working on, you know, my venture with actually is somebody I met at my first job with Lockheed Martin. I met his first day. Me and him were like, "Oh, you Black? I'm Black. All right, we connected."
Let's connect.
And we connected. that was going on 5 years now. So that was 5 years ago, and me and him are still tight to this day. Now we're about to put out a mobile application, God willing, in 3 months. So it's like. So it's like you make those connections with people, but at the same time, there are a bunch of other different hurdles, which include just the fact that there's just no sense of homeness there too. Like work is really work. And I, you know, there's some people I don't know because all I've ever done is tech, but there's some people who I feel like they could kind of meet those work friends. And it's like, you could come to work and you could have these casual chats about like, yeah, what'd you do this weekend? Shit. Yeah. I just hit the club and, you know, yeah. I was popping bottles. I was very, you know, like I can't come into work and say
and
that.
Talk like that.
No, like I have to put on like a true, you know, a whole different, you know, face.
Professional.
Exactly. Yeah. They know me as a different person than what my friends know me as, you know.
Hey guys, let's take a quick second to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's hilarious how Zoom literally came in and boxed the hell out of Skype.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Microsoft bought Skype.
Yeah.
But
which is interesting.
But Microsoft bought Skype mm-hmm. and then they turned it into Microsoft Teams, which is essentially the same thing as what Zoom does, but Microsoft has we can start recording because it's all kind of relevant anyways. I think it is. So Microsoft bought Skype, I want to say maybe 3-4 years ago, but they had already planned to do a similar thing to what Zoom is doing. So they have Microsoft Teams, but what Microsoft has the edge in is that they're like the biggest leader in organizational technology. So these big organizations, like, you know, not even sizable, but think about like Amazon or think about maybe not Amazon because they're a competitor, but any other large financial firm, they're going to use Teams. Because Microsoft already has them with their overall suite of applications. So it's just like Teams is just that add-on. However, Zoom has kind of came in as a unicorn for like individuals, people who are in that startup space, who hustlers like yourselves are kind of like, okay, this is free. Y'all can use our platform as well too. So it's interesting. It's going to be an interesting battle. And final thing on that is the fact that Amazon and Slack have partnered up to create a similar competitor for Teams and Zoom. So you're going to have another platform to do your virtual meetings on as well too. So the game is about to get real dirty. We're gonna see
what's getting messy, man. Bloodbath.
Yeah, we're gonna see who comes out on top.
That's interesting. I wonder what Amazon's goal is for that. You know,
I mean, Amazon is they are the biggest employer in the world. So it's just like they have a suite of people, and not to mention they have AWS too. A lot of people think of Amazon as this company that owns
the marketplace,
you know, just the marketplace, but they own all the underlying cloud performance that you have. So there's probably, who knows, you guys might be using, or the Zoom might be ran on AWS. Exactly. So it just taps right into their platform, right? And then you have Slack. Slack is like a communication platform as well too. Mm-hmm. So it's just a one for one. We provide the platform for the stability. You guys have the communication. We have the technology to throw a video on it. Let's just do it too, to jump in the game. So the market is ripe. So I think more and more, Google just launched their thing as well too. So Google just launched Duo 2.0. So kind of Hangouts. So yeah, everybody's getting into the game, man.
Yeah,
I think the marketplace is changing and a lot more people are going to start working remotely. So I think this is going to be like a hot market. But the thing is, it's just like, who's going to pay for it? Like, we pay for Zoom because we need the recording, but you know, looking at Zoom's like financials and their stock price, it's so overvalued because it's just like a lot of users, but they don't have a lot of paying users. So,
yeah, I mean, but the thing about it is that you can't, and that's just, I mean, you got to think about like, so we were just talking about, not Stripe, but the haircutting company.
Squire.
Yeah. So, you know, even though they probably don't charge a good high fee up front, but you want to get the users on your platform first, right? So usually with the way that, you know, all these startup companies kind of do it is, let's get you in, mm-hmm. make you feel just like how Amazon Prime worked initially, right? At first, everybody was free. You get your shipping free. Mm-hmm. And then they flip the switch, a year or two later, like, okay, now you got to start paying for this. You realize how good we are. You got to start paying for this as well too. And another way that these companies make their money is not through us individuals, but organizations as well too. That's where the real money is at. That's why the Googles, the Apples, the Microsofts, they play with organizations because that money is guaranteed. You set up a contract. Okay, I have, you know, 10,000 employees, which means I need X, Y, and Z amount of support. You set up a contract, you get that money up front, and they're good. So that's kind of the game that Zoom, I would assume, is playing. But right now, they're just trying to get people on their platform. It's like the Wild Wild West, like you were talking about first. So it's like, we need to do everything to get people on our platform as fast as possible. So when Amazon and Slack come in, they can't take you guys. When Google rolls out Duo, nah, we already just rock with Zoom. We just stand with Zoom. Microsoft rolled out Teams. We're not switching teams, for lack of better words.
So, yeah, it's consumer behavior. It's like you can't, it's like changing someone from what they do repeatedly. It's like hard to get them off that.
It is very hard. And that, you know, this is for anything, but tech especially, to change somebody's thought is takes a lot, which is why a lot of people incentivize you to do something for free. Like, you know, even like think about any small business, not even a tech business, but you got a clothing company, people are usually running giveaways and drives like, yo, this contest, follow us, you know, at three friends to follow us as well too. And we'll give you X, Y, Z for free, because that way it's like, okay, you're incentivizing people to change their behavior, kind of doing a step for them. And then you're kind of letting them come the rest of the way for you. So it takes a lot just to change a small behavior, because we're all creatures of habit at the end of the day, man.
Yeah, you get them hooked, like Apple. I got the Mac.
Yeah.
I got the Apple iCloud. And I've never looked back. Like the Apple. LTV on me is like 20 years at least.
Yeah, Apple, they know what they're doing, because they have brought you into their ecosystem, man. So it's like you get the Mac, you got to get the iPhone. I said, people usually start with the iPhone. Start with the iPhone, you get the Mac, you get the AirPods. Now they got Apple TV. You know, they are, and everything. And the thing
Apple
about
Music.
Apple Music. And the thing about it from a developer standpoint is, like, you cannot create anything outside of, if you're trying to develop something, it has to be for Mac. You can't, like, if you're creating an application, a mobile app, you can't code it. They're creating ways now, but Apple has made it very difficult. You can still do it, don't get me wrong, but the Apple has created a lot of barricades for you to create a mobile app for Android and a Mac, excuse me, Android and an iPhone at the same time too. Apple wants everything to be in there. They got their own operating system. Everything has to be within their ecosystem. So that way you play by their rules, essentially.
Most definitely. And they could have a monopoly on the App Store. They get like a 30% cut, right? Of every purchase made or something like that.
Yeah, because they're hosting it. That's their cloud.
Yeah.
All that stuff is ran off of their stuff. So, you know, it's all hosted by Apple. So yeah, I mean, 30% is pretty high, however, but yeah, they're hosting it. So it's like, you know, it's like a marketplace, right? If like a Walmart, they get cuts out of like what people put in their marketplace. They're not the direct producers of it, but they get a cut out of it all at the end of the day.
Most definitely. Yeah, I noticed that. Like, I noticed that like with Netflix, for instance, and also a lot of other properties on the App Store, is that what they do, because if you make a purchase on the app, or on the app, Apple has to get a 30% cut.
Yep.
But if you have them go to a website, then it's no longer part of the App Store. You know what I'm saying? So Netflix, if you are trying to like make a change or buy a subscription on Netflix, you have to go to the website so they can bypass that 30% cut.
And the reasoning because of that, and that's general reasoning, is because of now, you know, targeted advertising is the new game, right? So Apple is, you know, involved in this game too. Microsoft, Facebook, especially Google, those are the two big players.
Yeah.
But it's like they want to know when these advertisers are paying them, they want to know what way did you find the product. Did you find it through Instagram? Did you find it through a Google search? And they can get all these analytics. So in that same thing where it's like Apple is like, okay, you found it directly from our store. You searched it on our store. You found it there. Boom. They have that info. You found it from their website, you know, and then it rerouted you into Apple Store. That's a whole different thing as well too, because all this stuff is information that they have to give to these advertisers as well too. So that's a whole nother game that these people are playing as well too. It's a wild, wild west out there, for sure, man.
So getting back to you, Ayo, right? No, I mean, it's all good. Like, this is part of, like, the chat. You know, like, our community is, you know, severely lacking in, you know, representation in this community, right? Like, I mean, you can look at it from, we're the biggest consumers of technology. Yeah. And, you know, we contribute to, like, the culture of it. Like, Twitter, you know, you have Black Twitter, memes, culture, jokes, dances.
All these challenges that people are making.
Exactly. We make them pop, but like, we don't actually have a footprint in actual creation from like an actual production standpoint. Like, hey, we made this platform. We built it to like a ubiquitous level, like where we have several millions of users, and like the CEO, the developers are all Black, right? Like, we don't have that.
Yeah.
So this is like where the conversation is right now, especially with everything going on. Like, there's no representation in these companies. You know, from your experience, you know, you coming into tech, why are there not a lot of Black men and women entering the space and actually wanting to get into this space from the beginning?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is, I think it all roots to the same problem that we're all having in any industry as a country for, you know, Black people. It's all systemic, right? Tech is definitely, for lack of better term, just like the country club, right? Where it's like you have people of privilege. I know a lot of people who I've worked with specifically at Facebook, they are come from positions of privilege where it's like they're, fathers worked in tech, so it was just like handed it down to them, essentially like this knowledge, okay, you need to learn how to code, or not even necessarily code, learn how to run SQL queries, or learn how to UX UI design, things like that. So, you know, one of the reasons is just the fact that we don't have this tribal knowledge or this inherited knowledge from the people above us, right? If I didn't have my uncle working in tech, I wouldn't have gotten to tech. Let's just be honest. My mom, you know, she was a teller, and then she worked her way up to be, you know, a big deal at Bank of America, but she came here from, you know, Nigeria. So she, you know, was working her way up. My dad started off as a taxi cab driver, then he worked his way up to be a realtor. So none of them came from that technical background. So it definitely starts with just that experience as a, from a family unit standpoint, and having more people. I'm transitioning to a phase where I should, you know, my peers are being family men. So, you know, when I have mine, I need to be able to at least provide them with the insight and knowledge of how to become, you know, somebody involved in technology. Secondly, there is a gap within the schools as well too. Schools are slowly but surely turning around to start teaching these students like high school level, you know, core technology principles, but that wasn't taught when I was in high school. So you will see, God willing, you will see a change in, you know, the demographics of technology soon, but not right now, just because we're still, that age group hasn't, matriculated up into the working class yet, or working field yet, excuse me. Another thing is just the fact that colleges now, so when you think about getting to the higher education, these tech companies really headhunt from specific schools. So think about, like I was saying before, when you talk about the Stanfords, you talk about Harvard, when you talk about, like, these are, you know, Yale. When you talk about these top tech companies specifically, they are headhunting from schools like that. Not saying they only hire from there, but those are the schools that they really are foot on the ground, recruiting, so on and so forth. Fourth reason is because tech, you know, in tech, you guarantee, like for most companies, you are guaranteed an interview with that company if you have somebody who works there, right? So if y'all wanted to say, try to get your foot on the ground with Microsoft, you could hit me up. We found a good role for you. You guaranteed to have to get an interview because I referred you because I work there. And that's the same way it works for every demographic, right? So just think about now it's a numbers game. If your employee base is 95 or, you know, 95% non-Black, we're just thinking about Black people at this point, non-Black, 95% non-Black, who do you think they're going to refer? Non-Black people, because that's what's in their network as well too, right? So you can't even get your foot in the door because all these other people are getting their friends' foot in the door as well too. A lot of these, you know, I think there was like, I don't know, there was a high number of Facebook people who actually got hired, and the number of those people ended up being referrals. So it's just the fact that we aren't in tech is the reason that we aren't in tech. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we need more of us to reach back and refer our friends. The only way we're going to change the numbers rapidly is we refer them at a higher rate. So it's just like, if you think about it, every level from the working level to the college level to the high school level, and then just to the super youth adolescent level, we are kind of just like, we're cut short at every step of the way.
Yeah. And you also have to look at the population too, of like the general Black population in the States compared to like other, it's like, I think it's 12% Black the States is.
Yeah.
Right.
13,
so
yeah. Yep.
13, 12. It's hard, like, you know, you look at the small number and then you look at the representation in the schools of people who are actually coming into like math and science and the STEM programs, it's so small, right? So even when you are in there, it's like a continuous battle you're facing because representation isn't there. So you really have to like jump over hurdles to really just even get in the room, and then actually now you have to fight for the job. It's crazy.
And then this is the last piece that, you know, we own a podcast and we talking, so we're just shooting the shit at this point. So it's like a lot of people, you know, these, especially when we talk about big tech, right? I want to break it down on every level, but, you know, I've worked for larger tech companies, right? So a lot of people don't want to make the black people specifically don't, for better or worse, they don't want to make that flight to Silicon Valley. They don't want to work out here. You know, it's not the same thing that we grew up on. Like, I'm from the East Coast. Now I'm on the West Coast, but a lot of people are like, damn, like, but you're out there in Silicon Valley. Like, it's not really too much. You know, luckily I live in Oakland, but that's like a 45-hour drive from where I work. Thank God for, you know, COVID, blessing the disguise. I don't have to go out there no more, but that's a commute, an hour there, an hour back every day, 2 hours every day. And you're in the middle of kind of nowhere. Silicon Valley, you know, this is just a place where tech companies exist. It's not really too much going on out there outside of that. So a lot of people just don't want to live like that, because a lot of us have grew up in urban or suburban environments where it's like, boom, I could be in the city in 20 minutes. I could get to my friend who I grew up with. I have that close proximity to my friend, my high school friends, my college friends, so on and so forth, so quickly. You just don't have that. So, and then the only other option is if you go to New York, and those offices are usually satellite offices, which means they're smaller. So that's kind of another piece. A lot of people I know a lot of friends, not a lot, but a decent amount of friends who've had opportunities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one, the cost of living out here is high as fuck. And then two is just that, you know, people just don't want to live in Silicon Valley, man. It just is just too much of a stark change to their lifestyles.
There's no culture.
Not at all, man. It's all just man-made. Everything is, it just sprung up probably, 10 years ago. So all this is new, man. All this is new.
Yeah, most definitely. One thing I wanted to add as well is that I find that a lot of people give feedback, you know? Like, I was in an interview one time, and it was really telling, because this one girl came in, was the same race as the person giving the interview, and she was nowhere near qualified. But she was putting her best effort out, and she had a PowerPoint, like, on paper, ready to roll. This is my plan. This is how I think we can execute this. You know?
Yeah.
And just looking at it, it wasn't it. You know what I'm saying? But you could tell the effort was there, you know? And one thing that was very, very telling was that the interviewer took the time out to give valuable feedback on what she needs to improve her life. Oh, you know, how she can come back and actually be ready for the job.
Okay.
You know, I don't think I've ever got that feedback ever from a job. Have you?
No, you won't get that, because there's like rules, which even this is, if I could talk to one of my people in recruiting, I would know the answer, but there's usually strict rules with, you know, most companies, I don't want to say tech, but just most companies, where they're not allowed to solicit feedback for legality reasons, right? If you get, there's legalities behind that where they can't say like, yo, you didn't get the job because of this reason. However, usually, you know, if you made that connection with somebody, and, you know, because at an interview, you're kind of playing two games, right? You're playing the game where it's like, yo, I'm about to knock this thing out of the park, so I'm going to get all the questions right. Sometimes you can still, you know, work with a person and connect with them at a human level, and they'll still kind of rock with you as well. So I'm assuming that person probably connected with that person at a human level, and it was like, okay, yeah, but they're just not good on this side of the thing. And then sometimes that person will, you know, give you feedback, no paper trail. They know better than do that, but they'll talk to you and say like, yo, you got to do this better. You focused on this too much. You spent too much time on this. So they'll tell you. I've had a couple of those early in my career. But I think once you start, the thing about working with these tech companies, man, it's very, very, like, they're interviewing so many people so much, because they are all racing to get the best engineers, the best top tech talent, and they know they have to recruit so much harder than everybody else. So Google, it's funny, because it's like these companies, you know, they're recruiting hard. It's not like they're not looking. They'll reach out to you. But at the same time, it's like their mind is like, okay, like, if he doesn't get it, I got to have a backup plan. So it's like, it's very high turnover in terms of not even just from, you know, people who actually get hired, but just from like a, you know, an interview standpoint as well too. They are always, always looking for the next.
Interesting. Definitely.
And even that's why I see, you know, like a lot of these people who get hired, like the companies are, they have so much bias. That's why they have the chief diversity officer. It's like a role that's created now, right?
Yeah, just about every big tech company has that. I mean, you know, respect, you know, but at the end of the day, like, that doesn't, go ahead if you were going to ask a question.
No, I was just going to say, like, what do you think about that? Like, because a lot of them don't even have C-level people in the thing, but this is the only, they create this thing, which is, let's put a Black person in this role because we believe, like, this is where you can only excel. We don't want you. We want you in the room, but only in this where you actually help us. Don't look bad in the public where we're not hiring.
That's exactly what I mean. I'm just be frank. That's exactly what it is. It's like you have that person now on your board who's chief diversity. Like if you look at, you know, all the big tech companies, they all have people on their board, you know, of all different races. You'll find one Black person on each board. Same thing, chief diversity. So it's like, and that's fine and dandy. They're gonna, I'm confident that they're working their hardest to do that, to get those diversity numbers up. But diversity doesn't start top down. It starts the other way. It starts from bottom up. So it starts from the fact, it's kind of the way that the world is working right now. Like you have to, just like how all these riots are happening or were happening a couple weeks ago, it starts when people put themselves out of their normal way of thinking. It's like, yo, I don't see enough people who look diverse here. There's a 13% population of Black people in the world, but my company is 2% Black. I need to, as a white person, as an Asian person, as a non-Black person, non-Latinx person, need to step out of my comfort zone and do what I need to do to get more people in. But you have your day-to-day engineers doing this kind of work. You have your, you know, data scientists, and you have your UX designers, so on and so forth, people who are just doing their day-to-day jobs, and then just take a little bit of their day-to-day jobs to go that extra mile to get us in. That's when you'll see the change, right? Because at the end of the day, like, you can't have one person changing everything from their one little lane, because at the end of the day, who, think about the lineage below that chief diversity officer. I guarantee you it's not people that look like that chief diversity officer, and at the same time, you know, just like I said before, man, it's going to take, it takes a whole group effort, man. It can't be top down. It has to be bottom up, and you need to put those initiatives in place where you are telling your employees, like, you need to, I don't know, I'm winging this right now, but you need to do something to push the employees to kind of look outside of their typical zone, like circumference, to be able to bring more people that don't look like them into the field as well. So that's the only way it changes, man.
Absolutely, man. Also, there's a thing also with relatability too, with these companies, right? It's easy for a white guy to relate to another white guy, but they've never really interacted with Black people. So it's a matter of comfort. Like they'll probably ask themselves, and I can also, maybe I'm just thinking out loud, but if I'm a white person and I'm in this space, I've never really hung out with Black people. There's a big cultural difference gap right there. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just be comfortable if I'm starting my companies like 10, 15 people. It's like they have the term culture fit, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And what they perceive as culture fit is what they feel as if, like, I can chop it up with you and there's no feelings of awkwardness in between. Exactly. And that is like a white person. So this is one company doing it. So imagine how many startups are springing up like every single year. Now you've like totally blocked out like all these people who are talented, but just because you can't relate to them, it's hard for them to get through the door. Yeah. And that's how, like, I just feel like that's how the problem just begins is there's no Black founders. There's no Black engineers. Black engineers would refer the Black engineers, but the engineers are white because they all just hang out with other white engineers, man. So exactly. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, man. It's like I said, it's just like, it's a system, like it's systemic. And I don't want to go that far, but it's all based upon the way that we think, man. We all, right now, America specifically, we're trying to re-engineer, for lack of better words, the way that we think. So, you know, and this is not even just white people, but this is Black people too. We got to think about the way that we think. So, like, just the thought of being radical. Don't think, the norm of what we've been thinking as Americans for the last, what, 300, or some odd years. Like, think different, think outside of that box, man. Because at the end of the day, like you said, tech, we are such big, Black people, our culture is such big consumers of tech. Imagine if you had more of us driving the tech to make the tech. Imagine the engagement that your company is going to get. Imagine how much more time people are going to spend on whatever application that you're building. Imagine how much more money people are going to spend on the application that you're building. Imagine how much of the ad dollars that you're going to bring in now that you have this engagement and this money that you can kind of leverage to, get these advertised dollars. So, at the end of the day, it all benefits the company at the end of the day. It's a no-brainer. It's just, you got to do the work. Now it's time to do the work.
Exactly, that's a great point. That's a great point. I think that's what Harlem Capital is kind of basing their strategy off of, is seeing that diversity is money friendly, because of that diversity in talent will breed a diversity in thought and diversity in the marketplace. So then they'll be able to niche out and get more dollars from more diverse people.
Exactly. That's what it all comes down to, man. If you can, like we're talking about, America's very capitalistic, right? If you can tap into every market, you've won. Just like we were talking about with Amazon and so on and so forth. If you got every market, who can beat you? If I am connected, if I'm diverse from company inside out, and I'm producing a product that's, that reflects that diversity, everybody who's diverse, who's receiving it, is liking it and enjoying it and engaging with it. How can you lose, man? Your friends are on it. Just as, just the same thing. Like, oh, you're on it. Owen's my boy. Oh, Owen's using this application. All right, I gotta hop on it. A lot of people, we don't make decisions solely off of just how great a product is. We make a decision because it's like, okay, this person who's in my circumference likes this thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna use it. Just like, I don't know. How did you guys find out about Zoom? I'm sure one of y'all started using it first, or somebody, a peer who podcasts, used it first. Or you heard somebody about it, somebody used it, and it's like, all right, let's try it out. And now here you are using Zoom,
It's part of our thing now. It's just, we can't let go of it, because that's all we know, because that's how it happened.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're thinking about other platforms as well, just to go on YouTube and stuff.
As you should.
Yeah, most definitely, man.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, did you go into any STEM programs when you were a kid? I know you said your uncle was going to visual that kind of led you down the path of tech, but
no, I didn't. I didn't have any formal STEM programs that I was involved with. It was just the that one summer I spent with him. It was just all right, now I know what I'm gonna do when I go to college. It was kind of like a no brainer at that point. But I didn't have any. I was just always good at math. That was the only thing. I was always sharp when it came to reading and writing. Were never my thing. Still aren't my thing. But when it comes to math, I can get something real quick, or anything that comes down to an equation. So it was just I knew that I was going to be in a technical field, so a STEM field specifically. So I knew it was going to be segued over there.
Most definitely. Yeah. Actually, I'm very curious. This is a quick sidebar. Mm-hmm. How do girls treat you, knowing that you're big in tech?
And you're at Microsoft too. That's a big flex. And even on Facebook.
I have an experience with the girls that treat me because I just started Microsoft in quarantine. So I haven't really been out and about much. But I'll say like this, man. Like, Silicon Valley is more Black women than Black men in terms of. So the odds are already in my favor. So I'm not sure if it's just me. I don't know if it's me or if it's just it's a numbers game where it's like, all right, like, he's a Black man, they got to get with him. So it's, the women are definitely showing love, out here in Silicon Valley. But in general, too, just being Black in tech, I mean, you can Google what somebody's pay range is, being in tech, So it's like, women are, usually drawn to somebody who's, financially stable. So that kind of adds, I'm assuming that adds to it as well, too.
So how did they approach it? Sorry to cut you off. How did they approach it? Hey, hustlers, that concludes part one. Thank you for listening. Part two should be linked right below. Talk to you soon. Peace.